Vanity Fair, Red Dress Gala, details of which no layperson has ever been privy to, comes the one and only Sir Charles Coulomb, author of The Catholic Quest for the Holy Grail, signed and dated autograph copies available in the same store at mikechurch.com/shop. Can you finally disclose some details of the Vanity Fair Red Dress Gala to us, Sir Charles?
No. It's a blood oath you have to take in order to be invited.
A blood oath. Thus, Red Dress Gala, right?
Well, indeed. It's the color of the blood oaths we all swear. It's amazing stuff. It's kind of like the Bilderberger, only a better dress.
Hey, now, speaking of the Bilderberger, last week we talked just a little bit about this, but we didn't really get into the details of it. You being the consummate Catholic historian, what do we know about this group known as the Bilderbergers, to which His Holiness Pope Francis has just sent a cardinal to go attend their yearly, what, sacrifice of the goat and plan for the end of the Christian man?
No, nothing quite so exciting, Lord. It might as well be. I mean, how do I put this? If you get together the leading men, say, in Bayou Gula, Louisiana, okay?
Okay.
Now, they're all the top people, the top lawyers, top doctors, top businessmen in Bayou Gula. Their house of differences, but they have a lot in common. Kind of like the Rotary Club on steroids. Well, imagine something similar, but with the leadership of in politics and various other fields of the whole world. And that's the Bilderberg Group. Is it a conspiracy? Yes and no, no and yes. Are they all the same? Do they all agree on everything? No. Do they have a similarity of outlook bred by where they are in life? Yes. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, depends on the results. I mean, you know, let's put it another way. If you had millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of dollars,
yes,
with whom would you have more in common? The guy you buy a newspaper from, or your top rival in business?
Well, it depends on what kind of it depends on the title of the newspaper, I guess.
Well, you know, you see what I'm saying. They would have very little to say to you or me socially, would they?
Oh, so now is this the Coulomb Reader's Gentleman's Guide to How to Get into the Bilderberg Group?
No, not really, because I wouldn't be invited.
Well, you said millions and millions of dollars. What do you mean you wouldn't be invited?
Well, indeed. No, I'm afraid my poverty excludes me from many of the higher social circles. But I couldn't get into a Mardi Gras crew. But see, here's a good example of writing your own hometown. I mean, you look at the Mardi Gras crews. They're all alike in one way,
okay,
but they're all very different in another.
True.
And this is a dynamic that's very difficult for people to grasp. You could say that Mardi Gras is a conspiracy on the part of the Mardi Gras groups. You could say it's a lot of things. And yet, Mardi Gras, as you would experience it, say, in Metairie, is not what you'll see in the French Quarter.
Now, it would also not be what you would see in Slidell.
No.
Or if you went to a Mardi Gras wannabe parade in Lake Charles. not that there's anything wrong with Lake Charles.
No. Let's not bag on kids who don't speak French. But a lot of people don't speak French, and it's not their fault. You can blame the state of Louisiana since 1918. But, on the other hand, you also have a Mardi Gras mobile that has its own history.
Sure.
It's older than New Orleans, as much as I hate to admit that. And you see what I'm saying? You can read this thing a thousand different ways because it's very complex. There's a difference between the crew of Zulu and the crew of Comus. On the one hand, you know, on the other hand, they're very similar.
Now you know that the crew of Comus is no mo.
Well, it doesn't parade anymore, but it still has
right.
Ball.
Well, they still have their secret quasi clan meetings where they plot the
blah blah blah.
You know, Dorothy May Taylor, the city councilwoman, she had to bring an end to all this. So Momus and Comus and Rex and the original crew. You know, it was probably actually the only the crews that survived, or the only crews that actually kind of tried to maintain a spirit of the of Fat Tuesday, of the Mardi Gras, in the Catholic sense of the word, Charles. It's probably that's probably what she was truly aiming for.
I don't think she was smart enough. I mean, that would have taken brains. And Dorothy May Taylor, whatever else to say about her, nobody ever insulted her by calling her brainy.
No. Hey, that reminds me. I did have a question for Sir Charles Coulombe, author of the phenomenal work, which you can get on our Founders Trading Post at mikechurch.com/shop, signed by Sir Charles. It is called A Catholic Quest for the Holy Grail. Here in New Orleans, Charles, and I know you know this from your history, there came a group, and I believe the modern iteration of it was founded by, and the president of it for many, many years was none other than Pete Fountain. And that was Pete Fountain's 12th Night Marching Club. And they did less marching and more streetcar riding. But they tried to do it on 12th Night, and there's some tradition to this. Now, here in Covington, Louisiana, it was started as, and I don't know if you know any of this history, but Covington was not known as Covington until it was secularized. It was known as St. John's. And it was St. John's Landing, right at the mouth of the Chifuncta River, where it meets the Bogafalia, I think. That's where Covington or St. John's Landing, which, like most of Louisiana, was settled by French Catholics. But 7 years ago, a group of local businessmen decided that they were going to have their own 12th night celebration, so they called it the St. John's Fools of Misrule. Now, the intent was noble. Their result has been total debauchery and a total detachment from or any even acknowledgement that this is yet another Catholic social practice or social club or a social function that served both a social and a religious purpose in England. And I bet you know this story. I don't know it, but I bet you do. That has been imported to the new world, if you will, and the Catholic roots of it are either now ignored or intentionally just debauched. What do you know about 12th Night?
Well, quite a bit, actually. The French are very big with it. The Epiphany. It's the night before the Epiphany.
Right, right.
Which is January 6th, Three Kings Night. And the thing is that with the French, New Year's and the Epiphany were when they gave gifts. Christmas was a strictly religious holiday.
Right, okay.
They give gifts at Christmas now, but I'm saying the way it was. And 12th night was indeed a night for partying and all that kind of thing. Just like New Year's Eve. But, again, where you'll notice the loss is the disconnect with the liturgy. In other words, it's one thing to have a 12th night celebration or a New Year's Eve party, when you know that the next day at some point you're going to go to the Feast of the Circumcision or the Feast of the Epiphany Mass. It's another thing entirely when you're just having a party for its own sake.
Right.
And it's easy to lose sight of why you're doing it. I think one reason why Mardi Gras has, to a great degree retained some of its religious freedom, oddly enough, is simply because Ash Wednesday follows the next day and everybody wants their ashes.
That's right.
You're a non-Catholic, you'll get their ashes. It doesn't make any sense, but why should it?
Well, they have drive-through ashes now. Brother Andre and I talked about this on Ash Wednesday last.
Yeah, they have drive-through ashes. They've got Baptist churches giving out ashes. I mean, okay, whatever. But, as I say, it doesn't have to make sense. But the truth of the matter is that it's easy to forget these things. I mean, part of the problem is that in this country, the Epiphany has been knocked on to the nearest Sunday instead of being celebrated on January 6th. But that's a problem.
Sure it is.
It's like knocking the Ascension off its proper Thursday and on the Sunday. You know, do you have do you have down there what they call Stewardship Sunday?
So they call the Epiphany Stewardship Sunday, or they call it the day before?
No. I'm asking, do you have Stewardship Sunday at the church down there?
That would be a negatory, big brother.
Well, you're not missing anything. But basically, here, Stewardship Sunday is the day of the year when they really put it on heavy to donate.
Okay.
So my joke at the time that they knocked the Ascension on the Sunday was that to make up for it, they were going to move Stewardship Sunday to a Thursday.
Okay.
they did not do enough. And it's still flourishing. But, I mean, honestly, the move to, and the same with Corpus Christi, you know, the move to knock all of our feast days on the Sundays is a terrible, terrible thing. Honestly, I feel the same way civilly by knocking our civil holidays on the Mondays. What do Washington's birthday and things like that mean?
What's a mattress sale day?
Yeah, I know, and it's just another 3-day weekend.
Right.
And I'm old enough to remember when these things occurred as they occurred. And people took a bit of time with them precisely because they popped up in the middle of the week and you were stuck with them and had to rearrange the schedule. And they, if nothing else, they were inconvenient, which made you think about them, whether you wanted to or not.
So wait a minute. Wait, are you saying that you could have Washington's birthday on a Thursday in the middle of the tail end of the week?
Exactly what you said.
No. You know, I celebrate. Well, Charles, don't you move your birthday to Sunday every year?
No, I'll be enough. No, and I demand gifts of all kinds, cash donations. No, and it was the same with other of the holidays, Memorial Day, Veterans Day, and so forth. These things did not move. They were always on the same day every year. And so what moved was the day of the week they fell on. And everybody had to rearrange their calendar around them. And what was good about that was that it forced you to remember what they were about.
Right. Now, I was going to say, now it's just the last Monday in May, meaning I get a 3-day weekend, same day with, quote, Labor Day, close quote, which is never about labor anymore.
No. And that was the same thing. That thought was a fixed day. The 4th of July, they left alone. So if you want to know what celebrating the other days was like, it was like the 4th of July in the sense that you always look forward to a given date, and that date was it.
Right, and as you say, the 4th of July, it doesn't matter. Now, you may move, they may, now if the holiday, the federal holiday, falls on a Saturday or Sunday, they will move it. You will get your precious 3-day weekend. You'll get it on Friday or Monday. So they will move it to accommodate that.
That they will do. But as I recall, that they used to do when if a federal holiday fell on the weekend, you would get the Friday or the Monday off.
Right.
But that didn't happen, obviously, but twice in every 7 years. And of course, it was a lot of fun for schools to have to rearrange. I understand it's a lot more convenient this way. Why in God's name should we remember any of the things we're supposedly commemorating? Well, if that's true in terms of civic stuff, it's even more true in religious terms. Because when you shove everything onto the Sunday, the truth of the matter is forget what the Epiphany is about, what Corpus Christi is about, what the Ascension is about. And they said, well, they weren't going anyway, and this way they're not sitting. Well, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I noticed that they don't feel that way about the sixth precept of the church. Is it the sixth or the fourth, giving money? Anyway, they never seem to worry about the burden that one imposes. A totally different note, there's something I should mention to you because of the date coming up. Now, Sunday, this coming Sunday,
okay,
is June the 24th, which is the Feast of St. John the Baptist.
Sure is.
Now, you know that for the French Canadians, that's like St. Patrick's Day.
But the French Canadians don't celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
No, they don't. But but they celebrate it like St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, like St. Patrick's Day. Okay, got it.
It's our patronal feast. So the English with St. George, or the Scots with St. Andrew, or politicians with Judas. Anyway, the thing is that that is our big national day coming up. But the night before St. John's Eve, which will be Saturday night this year, that in Catholic countries is kind of like Halloween in summer. And even in Louisiana, they used to build big bonfires on the levee and so on. And Marie Laveau's followers would dance on the Bayou St. John. And according to legend, speaking of Bayou Gula, which is probably what was in my head,
okay,
every year, all the Nougaroo from all over Louisiana are supposed to celebrate in Bayou Gula on the Eve of St. John.
Now, of course, there is a Bayou St. John in New Orleans. The people that don't know, you're listening to Charles Coulomb, the author of The Catholic Quest for the Holy Grail, a book available. It's new. It's out. It's a great read. You'll enjoy it. You'll get a lot out of it. Get a copy today in the Founders Trade and Post at mikechurch.com/shop. There is a Bayou St. John in New Orleans. Of course, it's more famous now for finding dead bodies in it than it is for any commemoration. That person went missing. We suspect foul play. Where should we look? Well, let's start with Bayou St. John. So,
that would see in Marie Laveau's day, they would then get up and walk.
Now, there is Louisiana, of course, is made up of parishes and not of counties. There is a St. John the Baptist Parish.
Yep.
There is a St. John Parish, not the Baptist.
Right.
Near New Orleans, we have St. Charles Parish. We have, of course, the parish of New Orleans is just that, New Orleans, named for the French region of Orleans. To its east, you have the parish of St. Bernard. And then you have all manner of parishes named for Catholic saints here. You know, it's a shame that Louisiana has probably of all the states, would you say, the richest Catholic heritage of you can't throw it in the original 13 colonies, but kind of, because it was annexed by the Louisiana Purchase. But probably the richest Catholic history, or would you say Florida would have it?
Well, in terms of its relevance today, I would say it would be a race between Louisiana and New Mexico.
New Mexico. Now, there's something that we can talk about. Before I get off the subject, one more thing about the 12th night. The Fools of Misrule of St. John say in their founding literature that the custom that they are imitating is the one that was carried out in England, where on the 12th night, men went cavorting about through the streets, dressed in costumes, ringing bells and cracking whips to drive out evil spirits. Any truth to that?
Yeah. And they did the same thing in France and most of Europe. You know, this will shock you, and I hate to tell this to someone in the New Orleans area, given Mardi Gras, but one of the oldest desires of mankind, oldest interests, is to wear funny costumes, dance around, and make noise. It's just the way people are. And, you know, you can say, oh, it's terrible. Why do they like to do that? Well, they like to do that because it's fun. And one of the things that the Catholic faith was very smart about was accommodating human nature to the degree that it wasn't sinful.
Uh-huh.
And so this feast and this fast. There's costume wearing and whip cracking and all that, but there's also sackcloth and ashes. And I always thought that it was a particularly Catholic thing. While Mardi Gras was permitted and even encouraged on the one hand, on the other hand, they came up with the 40 hours devotion for people who wanted to make atonement for excesses done during Mardi Gras. So all the while that you're out cracking your whip and running around in your costume and drinking hurricanes, there's somebody or other praying for you in front of the Blessed Sacrament.
Now, see, this part of it, I don't think they got the memo on that, Charles.
Well, no. See, people only get the half. They don't get the other one.
Now let me ask Charles Coulomb, author of the Catholic Quest for the Holy Grail, amongst many other books that you could find in other booksellers. Of course, we don't want you to go there. We want you to go to Founders Trading Post, MikeChurch.com/shop. Charles, Father Sumich of the FSSP, I don't know if you've ever met Father Sumich, but he's the rugby priest. He's from New Zealand. Father Sumich said to the adults and mainly to the kids gathered at this breakfast that I went to at a friend's house after the FSSP ordinations. He told the children, the young people, he said, you know, there's hardly a custom worth carrying on in the modern world today that does not have its root as a custom that was brought about by practice of Christianity or of Catholicism. Would you concur?
Yeah, completely. Absolutely. Well, with the partial exception of Washington's birthday. But,
yeah, Washington's birthday!
Just thought I'd mention that. But even there, commemorating the king's birthday certainly was a Catholic custom. And we carried that over to both the 4th of July and Washington's birthday. And really, if you think about legal customs, law Latin, law French, you think about the ceremonies of the courts, ceremonies of the universities.
Sure.
You think about a lot of our governmental terms and so on. It all comes from some old Christendom, more or less denuded of any meaning.
Neuter, not he. That's a fancy academic word. Denuded, denuded. Let me say neutered, emasculated, castrated of any meaning.
That'll do.
There you go.
I can't argue with that.
Like some people say, name one. Okay, what do you call 4th of July? Well, I call it a holiday. All right, where do you think you got that from? Holy days, right?
It's hollow.
Right. And there's so many, there are so many. For example, hello and goodbye. Goodbye, of course, I'm sure you have a history of it, but I know it's a conjugation or a slang of God be with you.
God be with you, yeah.
No.
That's exactly what it is. And it's Halloween, of course, is Holy Evening, All Hallows Eve.
Right.
Christmas was Christ's Mass. Candlemas is the Candle Mass. And so it goes. I mean, it goes in everything you can imagine. We're talking about your mayor and your alderman. None of those come to us from Catholic times. Mayor means the primary person, the mayor, the maius.
The mayor, okay. Makes sense.
It's the Latin. It's originally a Latin term. The constable, or the comes sabaldi, the count of the stables. all these terms come to us from...
Wait a minute. Back up. I want people to make sure they heard this. The constable count of the stables. So that's count not to be stables. Confused with Mel Brooks's Count de Monet.
No. Nor with Oil of Ole, even though they rhyme. No. The count of the stables was a very high-ranking official, who was, as you might have guessed, the man in charge of the stables. But as a result, he was also the head of the police, because the king's horsemen were the ones who would enforce the law. And so it went. But we don't know any of this stuff.
Now, let's switch gears here for just a moment here. And one of your books, you write a story about rum, an epic tale. Now, what is the genesis behind the story or by wanting? Now, look, I'm all for it about writing a book about a spirit. Why rum and why not bourbon? Or did you write a bourbon book as well?
No, I did not write a bourbon book. What happened is actually very simple. One of the ways the books used to get written back in the days when people read was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, most people, they don't remember those days. There was a time when reading books was a pastime, kind of like sitting in front of the computer all day. Anyway, can we not say nasty things and just be nice? Can we be nice?
Yeah, I'm trying to guide you down a path of amity and friendship. But you keep deviating. You keep taking that left turn in Albuquerque they told you to look out for.
It's very annoying. I just hate the nastiness. It's got to come to an end. Stop the madness. Anyway, but way back when literacy was the law of the land, what would happen is that a publishing house would decide they wanted X number of books on X number of topics. And then their editors would take various agents out to lunch and ask them if there was anyone in their stable who could do a book on this and such.
Mm-hmm.
And the agent would look through his stable, either mentally or check his notes, and say, well, yeah, so-and-so could do that. And then would contact so-and-so, and so-and-so would say, yes, I can, or will, or no, I won't. And if he was amenable, the agent would bring editor and... publishing house and author together, they'd strike a deal, and then the author would sit down and write the book. Well, that is exactly how the rum book was born. The agent of a given publishing house sat down with my agent over lunch and asked if there was anyone in the stable who could write a book, a history of rum. And he recommended me. They said, ask him. He asked me. I said, yeah, sure. And that was that.
Now, let me ask you a question about the term author. Does the term author derive from authority?
Good question. The answer is I don't know. But why not? Could be true.
Because, you know, you can be an author, and you say, well, who was the author of that book, you think? But today, people aren't authors. They're not authorities on anything.
Good reason, because to be an author on anything implies authority on anything implies hierarchy, and it also implies that some things are worth knowing about, by which we conclude other things aren't.
That's right,
but we can't say that today.
No, we wouldn't want anyone thinking that some things are worth knowing more than others, because all information is equal, and it's all up to you to use your liberty to choose which information you wish to learn and which you wish to eschew, right?
Absolutely. Would you like to hear a list of the newer homes built in East Feliciana Parish?
Well, it's information, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it's information, and I've got it all here, numbers in great detail.
I think I'm going to pass on the homes in Felicity Parish. Now, if you had the homes pulled up in Caddo Parish, you know, I might say yes. But
who was saying Caddo?
K Cato or Cato.
It's Cato Parish.
It's Cato.
St. Cato.
Is it from St. Cato?
No, it's not.
I was going to say, you're just making that. Now you're just being disagreeable, Charles.
No, no. It's the thing was that as Louisiana expanded into Protestant country, whereas the North was settled by Protestants, they kept the title parish, but they weren't going to name it after saints. So they have all sorts of weird names up there. Wynn Parish.
Now, is that because they didn't want to be Lou's Parish?
No, they'd rather win Dixie.
And, of course, Winn Dixie was a... Lucy took its name from the Mason-Dixie line. Oh, wait, that's Mason-Dixon. I'm sorry.
No, Winn Dixie was a horse racer in Louisiana in the 20s.
And you started a grocery chain?
No, that's not true. I made it up, but why not? It's no less untrue than anything else you're likely to hear today.
We're going to try and deal with truths for the remainder of the program. Now,
okay.
Now, St. John the Baptist Day is the 25th,
right.
And now
24th,
followed by the Feast of St. Peter's and St. Paul,
right on June 29th.
Now, that's a big one and has been on the calendar or has been recognized on the calendar for I don't know how many years, but you might know. But what to me is fascinating about that is that everywhere I have seen it printed referencing the feast day on the Catholic calendar is the Feast of St. Peter and Paul. Now, alphabetically, it would be St. Paul and St. Peter. But being that it's on a Catholic calendar, I mean, glory be that even the new American Catholic calendar gets this one right, but give them time. I'm sure they could mess it up. They put them in the proper order. Now, this is a nuance here. There's some people be going, Mitter Church, please. What difference does it make what order? Well, it makes a world of difference, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, because obviously it implies the hierarchy between the two of them.
Oh, no. You keep using that word. I'm not sure that word means what you think it means.
All right, it means the pecking order.
Pecking
Is
order.
Is that better?
Yeah. Hierarchy to pecking order, I like it.
Well,
but
if you prefer the boss man at the servant.
Well, but seriously, there is a hierarchy there. Isn't it amazing how almost everything in the life that you would recount from the Christian point of view is somehow all tied back, is all tied to a hierarchy that can be repeated over and over and over again. Almost like McDonald's repeats its franchising process over and over and over again. Of course, without all the beauty, the holiness, and the pomp and circumstance. But this is truly one of the just either ignored or forgotten parts of Christendom and Christianity and Catholicism that ought to make it, you know, when we're looking for answers to things, well, do you have a repeatable centralizing authority that you can organize people around? Doesn't that make sense, Charles?
Well, it does. And, of course, what's interesting in all of this, you see, man is an odd creature in that he wants what is good, and he also doesn't want it because of the fall.
Right.
Well, it's true. I mean, he has a yearning for truth and a repulsion for it. And this is shown by the fact that on the one hand, he will reach out for it if it's made available to him. But if he already has it, he'll usually reject it. And that, you know, we were most of us, if not all of us, born with a strange sort of spiritual suicidal impulse. There is a part of us that wants to go to hell.
Sure.
And that part is the part that wants to do our own will. I don't mean to say we want to fly forever bereft of any hope. That's not the way we present it to ourselves. What we want is to do our own will and not God's will. That's what we want. And hierarchy is repeated throughout nature because there's a God of nature who created it.
Right.
And everything aims and points toward him. There's a hierarchy of being. Human beings are superior to animals. Animals are superior to vegetables. I'm sorry, salad rights activists. I'm sorry. But animals are superior to vegetables. Vegetables to minerals. But that is not to say that minerals do not have a dignity of a sort simply by being creations of God. They do. They play their part. They have a role. And what's true in the natural world is also true in the human world. It's true in the supernatural world, which is why there are hierarchies of angels. It's even true in a reverse way in hell. You might call what they've got down there sort of a lowerarchy.
A lowerarchy.
But the thing is, equality, which we make such a end-all and be-all of in our society, doesn't really exist. Never has, never will. And one reason, you know, we're talking about conspiracy theories a little earlier, one of the things that feeds into conspiracy theory, apart from the fact that sometimes people really do plot to do nasty things, that really is true. But beyond that, for people raised with the idea that we're all equal and everybody's votes and interests are the same as everyone else's, the discovery that that's not true is a horrible shock. You mean to say that there are people with more money than I have and more power who get together and make plans? Yes, darling. Always have been, always will be. And yeah, you and I are excluded. And yeah, your opinion and mine don't matter. At least not to our masters.
No, not for that.
They never have, they never will. What makes a difference is what those masters believe. That's what makes one society different from another. Now, ours believe in, well, if you want to know what the elites in our country or our Anglo society believe, just look at how the Episcopal Church has changed in the past 50 years. The directions it's gone in, I always say that the Episcopal Church, or the Anglican Church in the world, their job is to bless and sanctify whatever the ruling classes want blessed or sanctified. And when those ruling classes knew which fork to use, wore shoes, and didn't rule, the Episcopal Church was the church of beauty and dignity. But since the 60s, when our rulership had morphed into the ridiculous baboons that become, well, their church had to follow. And, of course, a lot of our people want to imitate that because they'd like to be in with the big boys, too.
Sure. Everybody wants a seat at the table where all the cool kids are.
Well, they do. The problem is that the cool kids, objectively speaking, are leading us all on a path to ruin themselves as well. It's not like they're going to benefit from it, especially if you look at what their kids end up like. I don't want to bag on Paris Hilton, but, you know.
Well, there have been several iterations of how their kids are going to turn out, personages that you could refer to after Paris Hilton. Of course, you know, you have any one of the Kardashians these days.
Well, if I could bring myself to meet one of them, maybe I'd get one of my own shows, but never mind. It's true. We our particular rulership have a quasi-ideology, which it's hard to define. It's easier to define by what it's against than what it's for. But one thing that epitomizes it, to me anyway, is that they would prefer women in combat to winning battles.
And of course, today, Everything is a battle. We can't frame anything. If you're an American, you can't frame anything short of terminology that makes one think that there's a war going on. There was the war on poverty. There's the war on drugs. Today, there's the war on porn. Everything has to be made into an homage to the to he that bears the bellicose spear over the Romans, Ares, a god of war or whatever. Almost everything, you see this everywhere. The vast military-industrial complex has been so adroit and skilled at in this 50-years-long project now of making almost everything that any average American can do on any given day can put them in some frame of mind, like the church used to be able to put people in the frame of mind that, okay, what you're doing there is okay according to the catechism and the teaching, but what you're doing there is not, and you better watch it, buddy, or you're going to find yourself on the wrong side of the state of grace and in the confessional. In the same way, in the modern world, you know, the almost identical thing happening, except there's no God. Instead, it's the civic religion or the religion of the military state. You know, if you find yourself on the wrong side of it, you committed what they term as a sin against the military-industrial complex. And
yeah, it's very true. And of course, you know, every now and then I'll read a term that just drives you up the wall, which is modern moral attitudes.
Oh,
now. When I read that, I'll tell you what I think. And I've made this simile before, but I don't mind repeating it. I'm reminded of the madam of a bordello who's absolutely convinced the girls are smoking after work. And oh, is she outraged. I know what those girls are doing. I know what happens. Soon as we close down, they go out and start smoking. I can smell the cigarettes. Madam, are you aware of what kind of a business you're running here? Yeah? What's your problem? Not, I guess. But it's that kind of outrage at nothing that characterizes modern American life.
That's right.
I mean, I'll give you an example just from the recent news. Now, as you know, President Trump just ordered the U.S. to withdraw from the Human Rights Council of the United Nations.
Yes.
Now, what's interesting about this is that the party line is that he did this because the Human Rights Council's condemnation of the separation of families under the immigration laws, which, incidentally, go back to Bush Jr. and were carried out routinely under President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not supposed to notice, so I guess we don't. But the real reason he did it was because of the Human Rights Council's attacks on Israel. But what makes all of this sad is that we should have been out of there a long time ago.
Sure.
Because of their defining abortion as a human right.
That's right.
But this wasn't a difficulty for any of the presidents we've had since they decided that. What's interesting also is that the Human Rights Council decided that in violation of several General Assembly resolutions, which, you know, a great deal of trouble has gone to prevent the General Assembly from defining abortion as a human right. And that trouble was gone to successfully. But the Human Rights Council took it upon themselves to define it as a human right.
Imagine that that a human right can be the right to defy one of God's commandments, because that's basically what it is.
The right to murder someone over whom you've got complete control is a human right.
Right.
Now, that must make euthanasia a human right.
You know,
and for that matter, if I have a gun, it must be... Oh, never mind.
So I'm watching this movie, and I know I asked you last week if you've seen the Brendan Gleeson film about Father James Calvary. There's a scene in there where a young man comes in and he tells Father James, well, Father, I'm troubled. I don't fit in anywhere, so I'm thinking about joining the army. And Father James says, well, why in the world would you want to do that, lad? And he says, well, you know, if I join the Army, you know, they'll teach me some, some discipline and some routine and all this. And Father James says, well, if you wanted that, you could join the priesthood. And he goes, no, oh, come on, Father, really? No, I need this. Besides, if you're going in the Army, you know, you're able to be trained to pick up a weapon, and you're able to kill people. And Father James says, he gives this monologue here. I meant to get this as a soundbite for the show. But he gives this monologue here where he says, just because there is a, quote, war, close quote, going on, and you have the ability to kill, does not mean that there is a universal suspension of that commandment that says, thou shalt not murder. And I'm watching this going like, boy, howdy, if this were broadcast on primetime television on ABC, CBS, and NBC, what a different world we might live in.
Yeah. I mean, I must say that the sad truth of the matter is that our military are no longer used for self-defense.
No.
One of the unfortunate byproducts of World War II was that it left us, and the Cold War, was that it left us in the position of world policemen. And this is sad. I'm going to say a lot of deleterious effects, not least of which are the fact that our allies, so-called, do not pull their own fair share of the defense weight.
Fair share. I love that.
Look, they've got to look out for themselves the same as we do, but they don't.
Now,
you have this. Why are our troops still in Europe? Well, because the European armies aren't big enough. Well, if we left, they'd have to expand to fulfill the job, right?
Stop letting these secrets out the bag and stop giving these guys ideas. Now, we're almost out of time, but before we conclude this episode of the Charles Coulomb Hour here on the Mike Church Show, which I very much look forward to whenever we have the opportunity to do this. And I want to go back to a subject that we covered last week, but I want to cover it again and again and again and again. And, of course, Sir Charles Coulomb is a writer. Now, you start writing for the Catholic Herald in July?
No, September. Well, I've written pieces for the Catholic Herald in Britain for, you know, a little while, for a few months. But I'll be starting regularly in September with the new American Catholic Herald. I believe the cat's already out of the bag on its coming, so I don't think I'm betraying any confidence. And basically, it's a, as I mentioned last week, there's nothing quite like it on the American scene at the moment. So I don't really see it as a competitor. The closest I could come to it is to say it'd be sort of an Orthodox Commonweal. In the sense it'll both cover news and abstract ideas and so forth.
Well, that makes the Crusade Channel an Orthodox common wheel, then.
Well, except it's not print media. But, I mean, you know, that kind of analysis of things and so on used to be the very meat of that kind of magazine. But and you still have them here and there, but not in the Catholic world, not in the United States. So that's the niche that they're looking to fill, and then I hope to be able to assist them in so doing. But yeah, you're right in the sense that it's very much along the lines of what you do with your show, what a lot of radio shows do. But again, you just don't see it that much anymore in print media.
Well, we're trying to do it across the spectrum by bringing on new talent to do shows in different genres, like Brother Andre Marie. No one would expect the success of a Benedictine monk who is now on episode number 135 or so of a radio show that was proposed to him. It wasn't his idea. It was my idea. But he is the success that we're talking about. Now, Charles, we only have a couple of minutes left. Of course, if I wanted to, and I could extend this into the next hour, but I know you have to get to the Vanity Fair brunch party, so I don't want to keep you. I want to go back to this subject of the evil that we are and the call to arms that is not being issued, nor is it, and because it's not being issued, it's not being followed by American men of good Catholic formation. Now, maybe you and I can do a show on this, or maybe me and brother, or maybe you and brother can do a show on this. The first part of that is obviously formation, which is important. But the second part of this is what you kind of described at the end of a piece that you wrote at Catholicism.org lately, and you and I talked about it, but I want to go back to it because I don't think you could talk about this enough. And that is when the Romans, when the Roman Christians were liberated, if you will, from the catacombs, dude. When they came out of the catacombs after the Edict of Milan, and then it took about 100 years for the process or for Christianity to become normalized, if you will, so there was no longer a persecution, etc., they could have just said, hey, like most modern Catholics, we've got the Mass. We only go to it 8 times a year, but we've got the Mass now. My work here is done. But instead, they led the charge out of Rome into the most hostile of environments, into the most hostile and against the most hostile of pagans and barbarians and savages and cannibals and every other Hades-forsaken human element that you could imagine. Undaunted, though, they sent the missionaries, they sent the monks, they sent the laity who went to, who, you know, someone had to go and go live in the in a parish or a bishopric or whatever after it was established. They did this, and they did it, and they went out, and they saved, if you will, saved millions upon millions of unsavable or unsalvageable pagan, et cetera, hordes all throughout all of Europe, into the West, going towards what we would call Asia and Asia Minor today, the entire northern part of Africa. This all occurred voluntarily, and the remnants of it are still with us today. Modern American man, though, cannot be bothered with this and does not, and think somehow that our Lord's commandment and his request that we do this had an expiration date on it. And the way that you put it in writing, I thought was profound, but we ought to put it in other media, and we ought to start telling and asking, hey, man, when are you going to get in the game?
Well, you've got to bear in mind that they had a very immediate motivation. And the immediate motivation was the salvation of souls, their own, and that of the people that they would work among. You got to bear in mind that they believed that membership of the church and baptism were absolutely essential to salvation. In other words, that if you didn't get those, you'd fry in hell. And moreover, that if you were a Catholic and didn't do your best to convert other people, you'd have a good chance of frying yourself.
Right.
Now, that was what pushed them. By the time we were settled, the dominant set, people like Father John Carroll, who became our first archbishop, they were of the belief that as long as a person was nice and paid his taxes and belonged to some faith or other, they would be saved.
What a novel concept.
Well, there's a history to it, and I've written a book about that history.
Yeah.
But suffice to say that it takes all, as Pope Benedict XVI said, May 2016, this belief takes away the need to evangelize and really the need to stay Catholic at all.
Now, there's one more part of this. You say you wrote a book about it, and I know you just mentioned this. if you're wondering about this, it is there's scriptural basis for this. Doesn't Saint Paul says something about how pleasing it is to God, knowing that one more soul has entered his church or something to that effect, right?
Yeah.
So,
and of course, our Lord himself said, unless a man be born again of water and the Holy Ghost, he shall enter the kingdom of God.
But nothing could possibly be more, I mean, if you look at it from a practical point of view, nothing could possibly be more pleasing to God and more satisfactory of the charge given to the apostles, we being the successors of the apostles. You know, that's another thing that's I don't think is evangelized or is talked about enough. At the ascension, it wasn't 12 people that were there. There were more than 12 people that were there. So,
no, it's true.
Well, people say that, oh, he only told that to the apostles. He wasn't just talking to a crowd of 12, bozo. According to the evangelist, St. John, there was a multitude of people there, right?
Yeah, the disciples.
The disciples, right. So the disciples would have been apostles, but they weren't the 12. So the idea that we're somehow that we get a get out of jail free card on this and that we don't have to do these things, I think is what is missing. And, of course, church doesn't do a very good job of encouraging people to do this anymore either.
No, I mean, it's a tricky thing, too. We don't, you see, a clergy that doesn't really believe, and a lot of them don't, especially some of the older ones.
Right.
A clergy that doesn't believe will have a hard time informing an ignorant laity, especially if being informed is inconvenient for that laity. I mean, let's not forget that the biggest popularizer of the church's teaching on contraception in this country was President Obama.
So, well, we'll have to leave it there. Charles, the book Puritan Empire, there's another one that came out in the series of books that you wrote. I'd never seen this one, Star Spangled Crown. Maybe on a future
crown.
And maybe on a future episode we could talk about the Star Spangled Crown.
Well, yeah, but I'm afraid you'll have to, you know, read the bloody thing. I'm sorry.
Well, I'd have to have a autographed copy before I read the bloody thing.
Oh, what do I look like? Some sort of a light? Oh.
You got books laying around your house collecting dust. I know, because mine sat there for 40 days. Come on.
I wish I did. My problem is I have a large family, and if any of my comps are lying around, they vanish.
They vanish.
I mean, no book of mine that is sitting. I mean, I don't even have my books in my shelf anymore. My nephews and cousins and all the rest of them pilfer them.
Yes, we know.
There's a lot of other garbage around here I wish they'd pilfer, and they don't.
Please, take it, please.
But they leave it here. But no, seriously, it's, I'll just say about Star Spangled Crown that it's, thus far, my closest effort to fiction. But it's not really.
Close effort to fiction, but not really. That is a most ambiguous description, if I ever heard one.
The better lure you into reading the thing.
He is the one and only Charles Guillaume, author of The Catholic Quest for the Holy Grail, available, signed and dated by the author in the Founders Trading Post, my bookstore at mikechurch.com/shop. Charles, thanks for lightening up and making our day. I'm sure it's a beautiful day in Southern California, so I'll let you get back to it. And as always, thanks for your time, my friend.
You bet. Thank you for calling. God bless you and take care.
God bless you and take care of yourself as well. Folks, that does it for us today.